like I've always refined like my strategy, but it's always been that thing of like the goalpost shifting, you know? So, but I have had to teach myself how to be grateful and enjoy the wins.
How quickly do you turn around, for instance, you know, the plan A will inevitably fail within the first impact of any war.
So of any contact with the enemy.
How do you refer back to a plan B real quick?
Good point. Man, like the plan A never really seems to work. And I think from the outside looking in, it probably looks like it always does.
Yeah.
Because I know looking at famous artists, I'm like, man, they just like put some shit out and everyone eats it up and it just works. And then you hear them talk about music and you're like, no, it didn't.
No.
So I guess like, yeah, I don't know. Like I think for me, it's like if plan A doesn't work, just like tweak it, do the same thing again or work twice as hard. Killer, killer, podcast. Killer Keller official.com.
Street Culture TV.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Sick.
Send it up. Ladies and gentlemen. Killer Keller podcast, live and direct, central London, or as central as you need to be. Choose to be, want to be. You don't want to be anywhere else, and anywhere else doesn't count. It's out of the geographical range. And our range on this podcast is particularly broad. Big shout out to all the sharing carers, people that have been spotting the podcast from jump, from day one. If you want more of that jump, stepping forward, we've got the Kellervision app, free download, iPhone, Android for your sporting arts and more. House sponsors the mighty GK Nifty Heads of a massive 100,000 play to earn NFTs to give away to the streets. Just hit the link in the description or go to gknifty.com and get ready for HODL Wars Summer 2024. When I say broad, I mean broad. We are going international, global travellers, you understand. We don't just stay in one place around here. Music and street culture is a calling, you understand. And this gentleman has been calling shots over in Australia for a while. Brisbane representative, numero uno in the Australian grime scene, no less. And it's a fucking pleasure to have him here. The mighty, the man, the myth. And if you don't know, get to know him. Goes by the name of Nerve.
How you doing, brother? That was one of the best intros I've ever heard in my life.
Serves you right, richly deserved.
Yes,
in our neck of the woods. How you been?
Yeah, good, bro. It's been sick being over here, man. Yeah, I've been very good. I've been busy. Yeah, it's cool to have an opportunity to talk about it as well because it's kind of like a funny story. The whole reason I'm here right now, and like I've been planning to come over here, like, and wanting to come over here for a long, long time.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, just, you know, like putting thoughts into actions and then just living it out, man. So I'm just stoked to be here, bro. And stoked to chat about it.
Stoked that we are having you here.
Yeah, man.
Yo, you know the madness is if a tree falls in the woods, do you hear it? You know, it's good to get a podcast in when you're in the area.
Because yeah, 100%.
Documenting that journey, that poignant moment in what is your first trip over?
Yeah, first trip over, yeah. First trip over for like music and just doing all this stuff, man. A lot of sightseeing. I went and saw Big Ben, like, you know, all them ones. Like,
tick it off the list.
Yeah, tick it off the list. Like, you know, obviously working on music pretty much nonstop since I got here, and I think like that was always the plan and the goal, and like there's so much talent over here, man, and I'm very like influenced by the sounds of this area, so I think it's just kind of a dream come true, and hopefully more stuff comes from it, you know. So yeah, it's been mad.
It's a crime mecca, isn't it, London?
By
default,
and like so many other things as well, drill. You know, like drill, grime, soul, neo soul, R&B, rap, like even just like rock and like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh no, you guys got AC/DC. Like,
yeah. And like some of the guys I'm friends with back home are massive here, like DMAs, man. Like they're a band from Sydney, and I'm like pretty friendly with a couple of the guys there, and they're like, they're selling out like crazy shows here.
What's that? Something in the Glue Sniffers, what they called, I forget the name of them. But yeah, and another punk band. Comment below, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a bunch of bands coming out from Australia at the moment.
Yeah. So like the band scene's massive in Australia. Yeah. So I think like as like a rap and grime and this and that like artist, I think, you know, sometimes we feel like a bit underdog mentality, but that's why it's mad to be over here working with people that sort of like are from the place that pioneered a lot of the sounds that we use as inspiration, you know. Mm. So yeah, it's been dope and made a lot of sick music.
And intuitiveness as well, because like when you're on the ground here, it's just within our lifestyles, you know, this is how these genres come about.
Yeah.
I mean, grime is it has a season or number of seasons now where it's actually just part of our lifestyle and psyche over here.
Yeah, well, I think that's how it comes into existence, right? Mm. Like you are a product of your surroundings and the people that you are around, and I think like the mentality, you can see it when you're here. It's like densely populated, massive city, people from all over the world, like, you know, just crazy melting pot. Like I thought Melbourne and Sydney were like that, but here it's like on another level, you know, like you've got half of my country's population in one city, you know what I mean? And like Australia's a big country, like it's and I think the competitiveness and everything is like exactly what I'm looking for to push me to, you know, excel as an artist. And and the fact that I've been able to come over here and make music with people I look up to, and
must be mind-blowing.
It's mind-blowing, and it's also very affirming to be, you know, I feel like there's a ceiling in Australia in a lot of ways in the space that I'm in. And like I wouldn't say that I think I'm the best at what I do, but I do think I work hard, and I think that being able to keep up here is an achievement for me in itself.
Keeping
you
up,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah, just keeping up. Like, you know, I'm in sessions with artists and they're just firing out. Like, they're writing so quick, writing quality stuff, like firing it out. Their taste is dope. Like, they all know the same people I like listen to. Like, it's crazy, man. It's crazy and it's sick.
Yeah.
Like, very inspiring. I'm sure I'll be back, you know.
Out of body kind of moments.
Yeah, and made some great friends as well, you know. Yeah. So, like, yeah. Obviously, stoked to be here.
Personality gets you anywhere, see?
Yeah.
Next on the Killer Keller podcast. Come on. Bruv, you're right. I think there's a lot of things that as localised, as people in England as we are, we don't see the novelty factors. We don't see the happy accidents and like, wow, like, but that's a really big thing where I live, you know. You're just normalizing it.
Yeah.
Actually, it must be, give me some ideas of like things that is normalized to us, which is completely abnormal to you from a cultural point of view, from just being down the, you know, wandering down the street of London, any given London street.
Well, probably, obviously, like the classic stuff, like the red buses, like the two-decker red buses, like that's like when you think of London, like, you know, like I put up a photo on my story of like one red bus and all these people are like, are you in London? Are you in London? It's like they know straight away. I think obviously like the old architecture, because Australia is like a lot of the buildings aren't that old, so it's nice to just see like even just like places that you wouldn't even look twice at, you know what I mean, like a lot of the venues, a lot of the buildings, a lot of the apartments, a lot of the accommodation that's built is old buildings. The good subway talk. Man, like even in the subway, like surely the subway is not that old because it's like, you know, it's a lot of work to get down there and build them tunnels. But I was in there the other day and like, you know, obviously I felt like I was in like Hogwarts, and I know that's like where they shot that shit, but I was like, this is crazy, and it's a beautiful city, and yeah, just like the hustle and bustle, and just there's stuff to see everywhere. And I think like even jumping on a bus, getting on the top floor and looking out over the city, going over the River Thames and shit, like it's just it's cool, bro. Like obviously you guys would be well over it, it's just your city, but to me it's like it's a place that I've like gained inspiration from for years, like even being on the train line and seeing all these stations that are just, to me, they're just song names.
Yeah.
Edgeware Road, like Ladbroke Grove,
Baker Street,
like Baker Street, like all these things that I've just heard from like music, or like Camden, like all them things. It's like I don't even know them as a spot, like I know it as a song.
That's
so like
crazy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I see that and that just gets me excited and inspired. You know what I mean? So
have you been to Camden yet?
I want to go to Camden Markets because I want to buy some records.
Yeah.
But I haven't been to Camden yet. Uh-huh. There's a lot of places I haven't been yet. It'd take me years to get to everywhere.
Been to Brixton.
I haven't been to Brixton.
Brixton's crazy.
Is that north?
South,
that's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, even that, Brixton, like Brixton Bully, like I know. Like all that shit from just music as well. Yeah. And I think that was another thing is like coming into it, it's like a lot of Australians like going into it, like their like perception of the UK, especially because I come from music, is like drill and grime. So like I have people being like, oh, like be careful, like out there, like don't wear your stony and shit. And I'm like, it's fine, bro. Like I've been told from people here, like you're fine, just like don't wear a rollie or something.
Don't go crazy but wearing like, a Rolex, yeah.
But like that's not me anyway. Yeah. And like obviously if you're not looking for it, I think in most cases you're not gonna have any problems. But like once you're here for a little bit, you're like it's like any other place, you know, like you just do your thing. But yeah, just
also
like
the vibration of people as well. I mean, like you've got a good heart, there's a good mind, there's a good energy. Like you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's a certain vibration that you kind that kind of attention attracts.
Yeah, 100%. And also like when you get here you realize that like not everyone gives a fuck about like rap music. It's like there's also just people here that are just Londoners that just go to work at an office job. Like there's 10, 20 times more people here that don't even know what the fuck drill music is or grime music is. So like obviously that's the majority of the people here. So it's not like you're just in a drill clip every time you're out like at a chicken shop and stuff. You know what I mean? Like
So
it was cool to see that. Like, you know, I spent like a week in Shoreditch just at a hotel by myself, like going out, getting an English breakfast, grabbing a coffee, going to the Sainsbury's, getting little meal deals. Went to Spitalfield Markets, got some crazy dumplings there. The food's been sick. The diversity of the food's been sick.
It's like a podcast tourist edition.
Yeah. Hard. And obviously, like, you know, done a lot of music with some great artists as well.
Talk to him about that, because my guy isn't just stuck in London. Like, you've gone to Reading, you've gone to West Country.
Devon.
Yeah.
Okehampton.
Casual.
Yeah, casually just, you know. But, I guess, like, the whole reason I'm over here, because I've obviously been wanting to come here for time, but I wanted to have a reason and, like, not just be here, like, begging for sessions. Yeah. So, like...
That would never happen.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Listen, if you don't know about this guy, check the fucking bars.
Yeah, check the bars, check
the
beats.
Hit Instagram, hit YouTube. Serious contender.
Yeah, you know the vibes. But it's a blessing to be over here. And like, pretty much the reason I'm over here is... I think in October or November last year, which is, you know, only like 2-3 months ago, it's all moved very fast. Songa had an Australian tour and
big
a
up friend, Songa.
Yeah, big up Songa, incredible artist.
Big time.
And I think, you know, they needed a studio. They'd been on a long tour and they'd done New Zealand already, I think, and it was their first day in Australia in Brisbane. And a friend of mine from Sydney who's a manager just hit me. I was on my way to the studio. It was funny. I was like having like a real slow morning. I felt like shit. And I was on my way to the studio and I was like, man, like I need to get some work done today, but I need to like lift my spirits a bit. So I went to, do you have Aesop over here? Like the fragrance business?
No.
Anyway, I went to like a nice, like a bougie, like fragrance shop and I got like a essential oil like diffuser because I was like I want to buy something nice for the studio to get me motivated. And I remember as soon as I walked out of the shop this guy hit me and was like, yo, this guy Songa needs a studio, blah blah blah. So I was like, okay Matt, I've gotten something nice from the studio and I've gotten something in return, you know what I mean?
That
so he hit me
bliss.
About that. It was just like an affirming, like it didn't feel like that in that moment, but retrospectively later. So fast forward like, I don't know, a week or so, they're in town and I remember his manager Tor, absolute legend.
Hold tight Tor. Been looking after you on your trip over.
He's been looking after me here, yeah.
But
back to then it was like he's like, yo, like we'll come through studio. And then it was just regular, like he was like, oh, do you know any barbers here? Like we need to get a trim. And luckily I just like cut my hair short and I just found a good barber. So I was like, yeah, I got the guy. And I like booked him a session
everything
with my barber.
Working.
Yeah, everything was working. Yeah. I was like, booked him a session with my barber and they were like, oh yeah, we'll come studio. And then I think like, cause they just got in, they were tired. So we didn't do the first session and then they were like, oh, we'll come studio after the show. And in my head, I was like, sure, like after a show,
of course
you know what
you
I mean?
Do,
like, of course you're going to come studio after the show. But because I was obviously gassed to work.
Yeah.
But I know how it is after a show, touring, if you like touring and stuff.
You've got your gym is ready. You know you're going to go, you know,
exactly.
Business as usual after a gig, right?
Exactly.
Closed doors.
Exactly. Yeah. But I went to the show and a mate of mine was opening Gatsby. And so he invited me to the show, and then also Songer's team invited me to the show. So I was like, okay, cool. So I'll come through. And met them all, you know, usual like pleasantries, like hello, like how's the tour going, da da da. And then watched the set. And because I wasn't super across Songer stuff, his face was very familiar, I think probably from Black Box and all sorts of stuff. But I hadn't listened to a whole lot of the catalogue, but I did listen a bit before the show.
Yeah.
But then when I saw the set, because a lot of the stuff at the time, it was when Vino Bandit's popping off, a lot of drum and bass stuff's popping off. And he jumps on stage and like there was obviously a bit of drum and bass, but the majority of the set was really heartfelt, like beautiful, like poetry almost, you know, and the fans were like there for it. So watching that immediately gave me like a much different perception of like what maybe I thought like leading in. Like obviously leading in, I was like, this guy makes bangers and he's got a great voice and he's a great rapper.
But the versatility
but
kind
watching
of,
the set, I was like, oh, okay, this guy's like pouring his heart out and like people are fucking with it. And I'm fucking with it, you know?
Yeah.
So I watched the set and I was like, this is sick. And so but the funny thing is that the whole time I'm there, I'm like, this is mad, but like we're probably not going to the studio, you know, is gas right now. Everyone's hype. And I was connecting with his producer, Cam, you know, the classic one when I talk to producer, I'm like, oh, what do you use? And they're like, Ableton. And I'm like, my G. You know what I mean? I see you got Ableton up there too.
Mine's an older grade though.
I love it though. It's a tradesman, not the tools though.
Yeah,
you know what
that's
I mean?
Right.
But
right.
So anyway, fast forward, as soon as he comes off stage and comes into the back room, his manager tour was like, right then, we'll go to the studio, make some bangers. And I was like, yeah, I second that, bro.
This is where jet lag works in your favor.
Off to
the studio you
go. Exactly. So like, it was like, nah, we're not like getting lit and just partying, because it was just like, let's take that energy from the stage and go straight to the studio and make some hits. He was like, I remember him saying, he's like, let's go make some hits then. And I was like, bet. We're making hits. So we just like loaded up his van. I drove straight to the studio. Gang, like 15 people came to the studio. And I've had a long history of trying to build and create studios, and our last one flooded, sadly. So we've got this new one. It's on the second floor, so it won't flood. and I'm very like happy with it. I run it with my boy Smack, and it's just like we put a lot of time.
Yeah, because this is a separate project, isn't it?
This is another thing, and we've got our own studio. So obviously people book time, we run sessions, I work on my own music, you know, we do live streams, we do all sorts of stuff.
You know, established business.
We put some time into it. And so it was lovely to be able to have like a big space to have everyone in, and it's big enough that you can work on music but have people like, you know, hang out and chat in the front room. So we all just pile in there. And it was even mad just to have them come in and be like, man, this is sick. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't know like what you're working with in the UK, but if you think this is sick, I'm happy, bro.
And then
it was straight to work, bro. And the cool thing was like, there was a lot of cooks in that kitchen. There was like 4 or 5 producers in that room. And that can be difficult sometimes.
Course,
you know, you've got one laptop.
Yeah.
And everyone's got ideas. And the usual thing that messes up a session like that is an ego where someone is more interested in having their part on the track than the track being as good as it can possibly
derails, you know.
Yeah, and there was none of that. Yeah. It was like me, Smack, Cam, 5 minutes each, just cooking up a little bit of a beat.
Yeah.
You know, like just, all right, cool, I'm done my bit. Like I've hit my peak, you jump on, boom, little bit. Same thing, just rotating. And then like we're just riding. And like I was just kind of, usually when I come into a session like that and it's a big artist, I'll take a back seat in the sense of I'll produce
because I do production.
Yeah. Well, obviously people know me for rapping, but I would say like I'm 95% producer, 5% rapper. And so I'm producing, doing this.
That's for real shit, you know?
Absolutely, that's the plan. And so Gatsby and Song would do a song. I produce a lot of that. We all kind of produce it back to back. And then we just start cooking up another one. And Song is writing and he's just kind of like, oh, so you're going to jump on this one? And I'm like, okay, cool, mad. Yeah, like because for me, like I think the way I operate, like I'm not this kind of person to walk into a room and be able to just like convince everyone I'm the guy. Like I'm very much more like I would rather get on the computer or start writing
show and
improve. And I think like it's a longer game, but it's a stronger game.
Yes,
you
100%.
Know what I mean. So that's it's nice when I meet someone who is forthcoming with that. Like I've opened for a lot of international acts, and I'm not the kind of guy that's just going to storm into their room and ask for a photo. But if they recognize, if they hear my set and they like it, and they say like, "Yo, that's mad," then obviously like I'll open up a bit.
Yeah.
And I think like similar things have happened, and the mentality is probably more similar to the UK than it is to America for us.
Yeah.
Right. So, and first of all, like meeting their whole team, they're all nice dudes and just down to earth.
Just
like
proactive
this guy,
people. Yeah.
Like this guy, like Songa bro, he's like in the top 40 right now. Yeah. And like the other day we just kicked it and played FIFA. It's like, you know what I mean? Like he's just a nice guy, like just a sound guy. And I think that's like a real nice thing to see when you see someone.
Yeah,
and it just makes you like even more inspired.
Yeah.
So anyway, cooked up some mad music, and then it just so happened that they were in Melbourne the next day and I was flying to Melbourne for something completely unrelated.
Wow.
So I was at the studio till 7 a.m. that night. They left at like 3, but I was there tweaking what I did because I wanted it to be like, you know what I mean? Like I wanted to send them something that was banging, you know? So I went straight from the studio to the airport and flew to Melbourne off no sleep. Had like a magazine thing, like an interview thing. And then I went to their next show. And when I got to the show, they were all like singing the shit I wrote the night before back to me because they loved the accent.
What?
So like the song
so
we did,
really resonated.
Yeah, and the song we did was like a UKG track. And like I don't want to speak on it too much because like – it's not released and I don't like to mess with the juju. You know what I mean? Like, but like, yeah, it was just funny, bro. I was like, yeah, they like the song. Like, and the accent's like funny, but they're enjoying it. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh, that's mad. That's cool. And I went to the show, jumped up again with Gatsby. Sick. Great show. And that Melbourne show, I think was their favorite show of the tour. It was just like, obviously,
Melbourne's
there's like a lot
got
of
it going on, man. I love Melbourne.
Melbourne's great, bro. Yeah. It's a very global city. Yeah. Show was amazing. Even more than the night before, the connection with the audience and how much they love him was amazing. And then just stayed up again. So at this point, I haven't slept in like 3 days. But I'm just like, hanging. Yeah, I'm just hanging with them and having a mad time. And then I just like broing down with Cam. He's showing me all these artists he worked with. I'm like, you're sick, bro. Mad. And then showing him like stuff I'm working on. I was showing, I don't know, you might be across this because you've spent some time in Australia, but I remember distinctly showing their whole team 360 versus Cursor rap battle. Hilarious bit of Australian culture.
Legendary. Go Google that.
Yeah,
make
360
sure you do.
Versus
very
Cursor.
Good, very
actually,
good.
Incredible battle.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I remember I got a photo somewhere deep on my camera roll of Songa just looking at me with the TV behind him and it's just like 360 and Cursor. But yeah, so just hung with them and then – they were in Australia for a bit because they were doing South by Southwest. And then like a week later or something, Tor was like, yo, you should come and do that song. And I was like, really? Like, you reckon?
Whoa.
And he's like, yeah. And I was like, well, like looking up flights, I was like, it's kind of expensive. Like, I'm not sure like how serious you are. Like,
yeah,
go ahead,
yeah, yeah.
Book flights. Like, I might feel like a bit of a muppet if I go and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And then he's like, text me like on the day. And he's like, so are you coming or not? And I was like, yeah, well, fuck, all right. So I went and then we did it and it was sick and he had like a great show and I was just, I don't know, kind of in disbelief in a way because like I said, like I'm not, like I know I'm good at what I do but I'm not really the kind of person to just like push myself into situations and the fact that they were so open, just like I think we just clicked
sometimes
as like mates and then
yeah.
The music lined up too. So that was really cool and got to spend more time with them and then they all went like post-tour holiday because, you know, if you're from the UK and you go all that way, you might as well go to Bali, right?
Yeah.
So they're in Bali and then I think Songa did some more holidaying with his girl.
Wow.
And then they came back to Melbourne and we were like, yeah, let's line up some studio time. And then the week that we were that I was going to go down to Melbourne to meet him, Tor calls me up and he's like, yo, we just got this Toxic song cleared. Because you know that Toxic freestyle he's got on Black Box.
Right.
And that's been popping for years. And then they finally got the sample cleared by Britney's team. So like Big Britney.
Even had to bow down.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's like, we need someone to re-record the vocals. And I was like, big. So I like obviously booked the flight straight away, went down, helped him out with that, shot a bit of the video.
Crazy.
It's actually funny. Like the video he put up, I'm in like a lot of it. And I like I was like, this is so funny, like, because I'm so unrelated to what's going on, but I'm just in the studio, like, yeah, good take, like, da 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 da.
So blessed, isn't
it? Yeah, really cool. Just a cool memory to have, you know. And then did another day in the studio, cut a bunch of demos, cool, just hung out, like, it was really dope. And then I think after that, I was just like, talking to the guys, like, we just clicked well, and I was like, man, like, I've been wanting to come to UK for so long, like, it just like kind of makes sense now. Yeah. And Tor was so like welcoming. He's like, yo, like, you can stay with me. Like, I'll line you up with sessions, this and that. Yeah. Just like so lovely, man. Yeah. Like, I'm like, I can't even express how important that is to me. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then in the meantime, I get booked for the Flodan tour. So there's all this like UK stuff coming at me, right? And I've like, I used to work in a burger joint flipping patties and shit.
Yeah.
And I would listen to like Flodan and Skepta and JME and like, you know, Getz and stuff, like all day, just like rapping their shit. And then like, if it's not their shit, I'm rapping my own shit in the kitchen. Yeah. And so like, I know Flodan from like grime days, like early grime days. And then I see him blow the fuck up. And that's the coolest thing to me. Like, that made me so happy. I remember I was doing a festival run. Well, I was along with my girlfriend for a festival run. And it was like when Rumble came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She dropped Rumble at a festival before anyone knew it. And it just went, oh, it
crazy.
Just rang off. And crazy. I was like, this is sick that it's Flodan. Because she's like, she knows it, you know, like, well, obviously, like, it was a massive song. But for me, it was like, oh, this is Flodan, bro. Like, that's so sick that he's blowing up like after being veteran. In the game for so long. Yeah. Like, it's so cool. And anyway, so getting booked for that was mad. And this is in the middle of all this stuff with Songer's team. And then
what perfect alignment.
Yeah, very nice.
Flodan, like, you know,
sound guy.
International now.
Yes.
And when I saw him and you on doing your things together on stage and, you know, just to bring in.
That was a good story too, bro. That's a good story too.
Tell the story.
Well, the first two shows of the tour, we did Sydney and Melbourne. And I think like my general mentality with like a big overseas artist is like, you know, I'll say what's up, but I'll mostly just try to stay out the way. Like I'll do my job, you do yours.
Yeah.
But about like two shows in after the set. And I think with those guys, it's like once you've been in the game for a certain amount of time, it absolutely is work. Even if it's your passion, it's work.
Yeah.
So, you know, before a set, you're sound checking, you got to get it done, you're focused. And then when you come to the show, you're focused on the show. But after the set, it's like you're a bit more loosened up. So I think like on the second show, after we finished the set, I popped in and he's like, yo, like his manager was like, yo, can we get a photo of you two? And I was like, thank God I didn't have to ask because I hate asking for a photo, you know, but I want the photo. Like it's a sick experience and it's a mad memory. And his manager, Nikki, shout out Nikki, legend.
What's up, Nikki? Yeah.
She was like, yeah, can I get a photo of you two? And I was like, yeah, I guess. And I was like, yeah, of course, bro. Like get a photo.
So I'm playing a little bit hard to get now.
Yeah. So popped in, got a flick. Just had a yarn, had a good chat. Yeah. Like, you know, I was talking to him about like how obsessed I was with like all the old school grime, Risky Roads freestyles, all the stuff he used to do, like Badman City and like all the dubstep tracks he used to drop, like serious heaters. Like I remember like because the tour was so big because of these new songs, but the majority of his set was like all these old, like, and he was, you know, DJ Carnage is dropping in all these old dubs and shit.
Carnage.
It's sick, man.
But like, you must have been in your element. And
I was in the crowd, like, to be fair, I don't like really go to shows, I just play them, right? But at that show, like, every show
like
I was
lit, again.
Every show I was drinking like after the set, just I watched every one of his sets, just like drinking.
It's the
like,
best life when you're with one of your, you know, your fanboys up to 100, and it's just like, yo, this, you know, you can imagine like a lot of these roadies, you know, sound engineers, people that are fans of the music, they just live the dream.
Yeah, exactly. The whole time. And then there's a lot of roadies that are just like over it.
Yeah, yeah.
But like for me, it was like after every set, I just watched his set, and like I'd be in the crowd, just like. I remember I was in the crowd with like some friends of mine, and the thing with grime is like if you're a grime head, the DJ will drop a beat and you'll lose your shit before the guys even started rapping. And my friends are like, what's going on? What's going on? I'm like, oh, this is that like dub edit of that old Ritzer Man tune. Like, you know what I mean? And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, ah, like losing my shit. So I watched all these sets, like every set I got lit, bro. Like I can't lie, like it was sick.
You know those ones where you're holding the camera for and you just
I was double parked the whole time. and then the Brisbane show, sick venue, Princess Theatre, lovely venue, big underground green room, lot of space to chill. Mm. And he'd just played like Meredith Festival the night before, which is like a 1 a.m. slot and then a 3 hour flight to Brisbane, right? Wow. So before the set, he was just chilling. Right, like chilling. And then I did my set, cool, came down, had a yarn with him. And I remember like just before he went on, he was talking to his tour manager and he's like, yo, like, are you going to set up that second mic? And I was like, my ears just kind of like perked up a bit. And I was like, what's that? And then I remember like I was sitting down and he stood up and like walked over to me and I'm like looking up at him like it's a movie. And then I like stand up and he's like, Grime, 16s. Back to back, and I was like,
sign me up. This is the dream that's coming around 12 o'clock tonight.
I was like, I think I got time for that.
Yeah,
but the funny thing is, like, obviously, like, had a massive grime wave, like 2017, 2018, 2019. It was all grime, and I think I took a lot of things from grime, but I kind of mushed all these sounds together to make my sound now. Mm. So for me, I was like, this is the craziest thing, but also, fuck, where's all my grime bars? Yeah. So I literally, like, you can see in the video I posted, bro, like, I got my phone out and I wrote out the first bar of, like, all these 16s that I had.
Because touched. Then you run them off after the first bar.
And I made it my lock screen and just popped it in my top pocket. And it was mad, like, it was, it was cool. Like, I was just side stage for the whole set, just, like, waiting for him to call me out. And then he had, like, this mad intro. He's like, you know, like, he's like, Brisbane, aka Badman City, like, you know, it's fucking mad. And then he's like, you know, you've seen Nerf perform, but you haven't seen him perform with me.
Yeah.
And then we went back to back 16s. Carnage gave me a mad wheel up on the first one. Like, mad. It was sick, bro. Like, 17-year-old me, even me now, obviously, but 17-year-old me would have been fucking flipping out if he knew that that was ever going to happen in my
life. Riding over Carnage as well, just like...
Yeah, crazy, bro. Like, seriously nuts. And, like, obviously in that moment, it's like I'm doing my job.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I'm gassed. But, like, to think about me as a kid, like, thinking that that's happened and, like, not only that it happened but that it went well, you know, like, and then, like, after we kicked it after the show, like, took him to some local spots and stuff, like, just... hung out and it was just, it's just nice, man. Like, it's nice meeting an artist that you look up to and then having a good time with them as a person too, because obviously the artist and the person, they're two different things.
Oh, he's a lovely, float down. He's a lovely man.
Dude, and just good a funny people. Guy, bro.
Yeah.
So, like, banter. It was good times, man. And so that all was just sick. And then I remember, like, I was up after I got everyone in the crowd to like send me iPhone videos and I like screen recorded all the stories and I was up on Premiere Pro on my laptop till like 5 a.m. just still drunk, bro, just like editing this video together.
Happy drunk.
Yeah, and I sent it to his manager and she's like, oh yeah, we'll post it with you. And I was like, that's mad. Yeah, so pop that video up and it's like, that's never coming off.
No, that's set of fires.
And I think for me, like I think after that I was like, I'm booking flights to London.
Hands down.
Yeah.
It's almost like the co-sign right there.
Exactly. And like last year I linked up with a publisher. So fortunately that also meant that I was booking in free studio time here at Tile Yard. So it was like, okay, I can come here. I can get studio time at a nice studio, which means that if I hit artists, I can be like, I've got a spot, not be like, where do you work? Or like have to pay out the ass for some stuff.
Tile Yard's a spot.
It's a great spot.
It's an industry spot too.
Yeah, it's a great spot. So, you know, like booked flights, started hitting up artists that I'd heard of, met or worked with before, started doing stuff at Tile Yard. And I think like it just helped. It helped having those cosigns because, like, say I hit up someone from the UK and they look at my profile, they see me on stage rapping back to back with Floden, and it's like, okay, this guy's probably fine, you know? So, and then going in as a rapper and producer makes it easier too because I can work in different elements.
Yeah, you've multitasked, you can do either or.
Yeah, like if it's a big artist and they don't need a track with me, then I'll just produce one for them, you know? And like at the end of the day, like, I just want to make good music with good artists and that's all I want. Yeah. Like if none of this UK stuff had happened, I'm still so happy to be working with some of the people that I'm working with back in Australia. Like I've been working on some great projects and like I just want to be able to wake up every day and get in a room with myself or someone else who's just doing their thing to the best of their ability and make some beautiful shit. And I want to help make them be their best. So, like, I'm just, it's all worked out very well. I'm happy to be here and I just want to keep, like, moving forward with it and just following, like, the sort of shit that lights you up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, like, that's pretty much how it came to be that
up
I'm
to
here.
To this point, yes. Yeah. But your profile, again, like you were saying, you know, 15-track albums and such, you know, you've been a very prolific artist up till now, and not just in grime, you know, like you say, the versatility in how you produce, how you write bars, it's, you know, it's all there, and collaboratively as well, with collaborations.
Yeah, lots of collaborations. I think, like, you learn, like, you learn a lot every time you work with someone. Mm. Even if you go to a session and you don't put the music out, you're always going to learn something. If I work with a producer, I always learn some new tips and tricks on, like, production or, like, Ableton. And if I work with a new writer, I'll just listen to them write and be like, damn, that's crazy. I've got to try some of that shit. Like, so being here, massive burst of inspiration, pretty much straight out the gate, made some sick music, had sessions with, like, Young Dave and Kill Owen straight off the bat. Love both of those guys.
Bruv, like, we're talking about 5 or 6 tunes or more right now.
Yeah,
like,
and then
bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, it was just banging them out. I think, like, that was first 2 days, 2 songs a day, just bang. Fuck. And then worked on some stuff with Songa out in the country.
Yeah.
That was just amazing to be a part of, like, crazy artist, getting to hear what he's working on before it's dropped is crazy, because you know how many people out there would love that.
First dibs on your audio, man.
Exactly.
Crazy.
Exactly. And then just, like, being able to hang out with them, and there were some other really talented producers there too. Being able to see the city and then coming back, working with more artists, and yeah, it's just so much inspiration, man.
Where's the tenacity come from with you, bro? Like, where does the desire, to the point that there's no obstacles, the roads are clear?
It's a good question, bro. It almost feels like a psychologist question. Yeah. I don't really know. I think, like, you know what it might be? I think I've always been, like, goal-orientated and, like, not to get, like, astrology, but I'm a Capricorn, and I think that's, like, a massive trait of a Capricorn is, like, I like setting a goal and achieving it. And then, like, for example, like, I sleep good. Like, if I was left to my own, like, device, I would sleep all day.
Mm-hmm.
But if I go studio and I want to make a good song with someone and I make a good song with them, I might not sleep the next night and I'll wake up fresher than if I slept a full 10 hours or 8 hours. So, like, that's the shit that just lights me up, is, like, making great music and just making cool stuff and, like, being able to express things. So I don't know, like, I guess I've had the same tenacity with other things. Like, I played a lot of football when I was a kid. I got into football when I was 10 because the Australian team, the Socceroos, qualified for their first World Cup in, like, 30 years.
I was going to ask whether you were a sportsman. I would imagine that tenaciousness translates.
Yeah, actually, it probably did come from that, because I got into football and I was, like, I got in late. Like, 10 years old is, to be fair, like, kind of a bit late to get into a sport if you want to play professionally.
Yeah.
And I was shithouse. Like, I was terrible. Like, I was toe-poking it for, like, a year. And then I did this, like, Sheffield United training camp in Brisbane. And I met – and this – I don't know. There was, like, one coach there that, like, took a liking to me and he told me to come to his club. So I went from, like, under-11s Div 4 to, like, under-13s Div 1. Because I didn't make the under-12s Div 1 team, but he thought I had some – promise, so he just put me up a year in Div 1 and I was like, what the — it was like one of them ones, like, I was like, I remember being so sad when I didn't make the team, and then the coach called my dad up and was like, oh, we want him to play a year up. So I was like, I didn't make that team, but I made the team in the same Div a year up. And then I had to, like, because I was little for that, like, I remember Verse and Kizza were massive, man, and I had to, like, learn how to just go in, like, for the kill, because I had no weight on me. And then yeah, so I had to, like, play real hard. And I think just seeing the Socceroos get into the World Cup, watching every game and watching how they got all the way to the round of 16, even though they were, like, the ultimate underdogs, and Italy knocked them out, that was bullshit, but whatever. We could have been in the quarters, which is nuts. And I think just seeing that, I was like, I want to be a Socceroo. And I guess that was a goal. And then I was just like, bang. So like I was
crazy.
You know, like the off season, I was just out the back, just banging a ball against the wall, like left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. Pretty much got to a point where I was like ambidextrous, which helped heaps as like a as a footballer. And then I just like went crazy with the football, went to a school that had a football academy and like just I was playing like and that was the only reason I got into the school. It was a public school, but because I was outside of the catchment area, I had to travel like an hour to get there. But I just went there because they had training sessions as classes. Yeah. And I was like, that's a sick way to get out of class. Yeah. So I was doing like 4 days a week training at school, 3 days a week training at club, one rep game, one club game. So I was doing like 25 hours of soccer a week. And that was just like my whole life, you know what I mean?
Jeez.
And I was just like, bang, bang, bang. And I was doing really well. And I think at one point, like, I don't know what it was. Like, I had intense coaches and I was, like, captain of the team and stuff. And I think, like, it was getting, like, quite stressful. And I eventually, like, realized that I want to play it for fun and I didn't want to go to training. So I ended up dropping, like, dropping it at some point and then just playing lower divs and just having fun with it. But that was still, like, my massive goal at that time.
That's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And the drive, determination on that as a mindset for life, you know, of course you're going to do well in music, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, it's kind of, it's one of the, yeah, I don't know, I guess, yeah, it's like a similar thing, right? And then the only thing with
can you
music,
play the same kind of, can you apply the same sort of strategy?
Like, yeah, I guess
repetition
so.
Repetition is key.
Yeah, yeah, you have to like, you have to go, like, you have to show up even if you don't want to sometimes. And I think almost it's harder in music because, especially if you're like a solo artist because you're your own boss, like I could wake up and just not do anything if I wanted to. If I want to have a day off, I can have a day off. No one's going to get mad at me.
No.
But I'll be mad when I don't get paid in 3 months' time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so but you have to build your own discipline. And I think like the soccer, when the soccer stuff, like football stuff, like went out, was when I got into hip hop. And then I was just absolutely obsessed.
Yeah, we've had a good hip hop chat as well. I mean, geez, we like big up all the Australian hip hop crew outside looking in.
Yeah, man.
Goes without saying that, you know, created huge impact in culture worldwide.
Yeah, massive. Especially that Cursor 360 battle. Yeah, huge.
Crazy.
But yeah.
Hilltop Hood, Delta. I mean, you know, just a couple off the bat. Tom Thumb.
Yeah.
From a beatbox
Yeah,
point
Tom
of view.
Thumb's. Tom Thumb is the king.
Avalanches.
Yeah.
Avalanches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. They're like kind of hip hop vibes too. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, so I almost like swapped out like soccer for music because I got obsessed with hip hop and then I like got put onto it from a friend and I was just like hooked, man. And then I just like started writing raps as a joke and then it wasn't a joke anymore. And, like, I remember just going to parties, like, trying to rap to people, this and that. And then I met some like-minded people that like my music. I like their music. Mm-hmm. We started working together. And then it was just, like, kind of strength to strength. Learned how to produce. Recorded myself in the cupboard and shit, like, with egg cartons of soundproofing and stuff.
So what year was this?
This was, like, 2014, 15.
2014.
So I was just out of school, just starting uni, and then just, like, yeah, every day it was just like when I wasn't like studying or something, like it was just music, music, music. And then I was just obsessed with it, man. Like I was just, and like learning how to produce was difficult. So I was like banging my head against the wall trying to learn Ableton for like 2 years, you know, and just something made me push through it. Like I get frustrated, I turn it off, I go do something else, but then I get this itch, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah, it gets your upper lip, doesn't it? Yeah. Just remove yourself from the stress.
And then I come back to it and then just strength to strength, releasing music, started getting recognition from like artists that I look up to, started traveling around doing shows, and then kind of this is just another extension of that, I guess. Like every time I remember thinking like if I make one authentic 90s boom bap beat, because I remember going on YouTube and finding all these sick beats and I'd be like, why don't mine sound like that? And then I was thinking like, if I make one beat that just sounds like this, I could stop and I'll be happy. And then I did it and I was like, I need to make another one, you know what I mean?
Like, I need more.
I need more. And then the same thing, I remember being like, if I could just play a show, I like, to me, like playing a show was like I was like, if I just play one show, I don't care if there's 10 people If I get to go on stage and spit my shit, spit my 100 bars straight of random nonsense, I'll be happy.
And I'll be happy. Yeah.
And I had my first show. I was a special guest for this guy I was working with. And I printed out all these demo discs with like Windows Media Player. I doubt any of them worked. I probably just drag and drop them on. They were probably dodgy. But I just like went to his show. It was probably like 50 people there. A lot of my friends were there. I got up, did my special guest thing, played a song, played like one, two songs. And I was just so happy that anyone was even there to listen, even that they liked it or not. And then I went out and just started slinging CDs for free, just bang, 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 bang. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, I remember this one guy being like, this is going to be worth $1 million in 10 years. Can you sign it? And I was like, yeah, this is crazy.
What's wrong, bro?
Like, and then like, and then I like went out and just like, and then after that, I was like, I need to play a show to 100 people. Yeah. I was like, I need to play more shows. I need to get on radio, Like every single time the goalpost shifted.
Addiction kicks in.
Yeah, exactly. And like that can, like I think throughout the years I've like struggled with that too, because if you set the, if you set goals that aren't achievable, you're going to, you're going to lose yourself. And I, so I think like I've always refined like my strategy, but it's always been that thing of like the goalpost shifting, you know? So, but I have had to teach myself how to be grateful and, enjoy the wins.
How quickly do you turn around, for instance, you know, the plan A? The plan A will inevitably fail within the first impact of any war.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
any contact with the enemy.
How do you refer back to a plan B real quick?
Good point. Man, like the plan A never really seems to work. And I think from the outside looking in, it probably looks like it always does.
Yeah.
Because I know looking at famous artists, I'm like, man, they just like put some shit out and everyone eats it up and it just works. And then you hear them talk about music and you're like, no, it didn't.
No.
So I guess like, yeah, I don't know. Like I think for me, it's like if plan A doesn't work, just like tweak it, do the same thing again or work twice as hard. I remember listening to a podcast recently. It was called High Performance. It's a UK podcast. Nice. And there was a guy on there, I can't remember his name, but he pioneered darts and boxing in the UK.
Wow.
A businessman.
Old school guy.
Yeah, old school guy. Real geezer. Like his voice is crazy.
Wide and croaky.
He was like, early doors, like all that. And I remember him just saying like, he had like 10 rules for life, but one of them was you don't need to burn the brightest, but you do need to burn the longest. So I think for me it was like even in sport, right, I never won a grand final. You know, we won like premierships, but they're not as important in Australia for whatever reason. Never won a grand final in athletics, never came first, I've never really like won anything. I've been nominated for music awards, never won. And that can be discouraging, but I just kept going.
Kind of in an underdog way, you get celebrated. Cult classic, you get celebrated a particular, on a particular measure, which still gives you enough coverage to get to that point.
Yeah.
But you've got to be able to pinpoint and set your sights, right?
Yeah, and I don't know why. I don't know, like I was never the fastest kid. I was never the strongest. I never like, never was like that number one. Mm. But I think the fact that I wasn't meant that I always just kept working.
Yeah.
And I think that like, there's probably a lot of people that think I am number one.
You are number one.
But like,
you're up there, bruv. Like, without question. Like,
yeah, I appreciate
that. You guys
that.
Made that judgment. You go on fucking Instagram and check out Nerve. He's a serious fucking contender out here.
But I think also like, I think being able to process and cope with the fact that you weren't number one is probably what's going to eventually make you better than that one day. Because if you can be like, I think that's why, you know, like that's why I want to, that's why I'm happy that I produce, because like I might not be the artist in a session, but if I can produce the artist and make them even better, that's only going to be good for me. You know what I mean? As well as them. Like, it's mad. So, like, I don't know. Yeah, like, never felt like number one in a lot of situations, but I think I never stopped either.
Versatility, yeah.
Yeah, I never went – and I never liked being bad at things. I think that's why I never actually learned an instrument. That's why I went to producing, because I tried to learn keys, tried to learn guitar. I never practiced. Like, I would go to the lesson and be like, whatever. I'd go home and just put it away.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to walk in and do a solo.
That's it.
But I didn't want to have to learn my fucking, like, I didn't want to have to learn the keys and the chords. And and I knew that that was stupid. Like, my mum would always tell me that's stupid. You have to, like, you have to...
big up Mumsy.
Yeah, big up Mumsy. But when I picked up a... like, when I got Ableton, it was like, okay, I can, like, make, like, a funny little drum pattern now and I can hear it back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that it was just quicker to, like, kind of become something I could listen to and listen back. So I just stuck on that and just went – and even that, like, that was tough too. Like, I would be making beats, listening to them, and then playing the ones on YouTube and being like, why the fuck doesn't my stuff sound like that? And then I would just have to Google everything, YouTube everything, and just learn that way. Like, I never went to school for any of that stuff. And I think the school stuff does help. But I've also noticed, like – sometimes it seems like going to school for something might ruin, like, the art of it, because there's, like... I mean, it's definitely good. Like, I bet if I went to sound engineering school, I'd probably to pick up some things. But I also think, like, the way that I learnt and cut my teeth with it's probably the reason I sound how I do. And, like, some people seem to like that, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think the tenacity of never coming first gives you the drive to always have to be better.
Yeah.
Because if I was coming first from a young age, you know how people always say, like, oh, the popular kids in high school, like, they end up, like, kind of being bummed.
Bummed out.
You know what I mean? And, like, that's not necessarily true, but I think if I was just, like, championed my entire childhood or something, I'd probably just get lazy. But it's like, and yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't, it's, and it's also, like, I don't necessarily feel the need to be the best as well. Like, I just want to be the best I can be. And
that's the biggest desire, isn't it? To challenge yourself, right?
Yeah. And also,
should be anyway.
As a producer, rapper as well, a producer, artist, I think that being able to help other people be their best is just as rewarding as making myself, like, as a front artist, the best. Like, I could come to London and work with a bunch of artists and do all these collabs, or, like, I could come here and produce for, like, 15 people and then have 15 releases with 15 different artists.
The gods respond to that attitude as well. I do believe, you know, the act of giving rather than, you know, self-serving.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think I have had to learn that, because I think, you know, younger, obviously, you know, even though I didn't come first and stuff, I was always grinding, and I think I was, like, pretty self-absorbed, like, with the music stuff. I always feel like I had the right intentions, but I definitely have tunnel vision. Like, crazy. Like, when I'm on something, I'm on it, bro. Like, like how I said, I was editing that Flowdown video until 5 a.m. Like, I just decided, I'm not sleeping. I'm drunk.
A dog with
I'm
a bone. Not
yeah, exactly. Like, right. I've come home from, like, this after party, and I'm just bang, like, because I can't live with not finishing it right now. Because, like, I think I got that from my mum. Like, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right now, and it's worth doing properly.
What's the missus think? She must drive girls mad.
But also, like, you know, I think if you find the right
person... No denying on that one right there.
I think if you find the right person that believes
good
in you,
recovery.
Then they're always going
very
to...
good recovery.
They're always going to appreciate it. But, yeah, you got to keep your priorities straight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, man, I think that's, like, kind of the mentality.
Yeah.
And, yeah, shit, here we are.
Yeah, and here we are.
Yeah.
One of few MCs that have made regular ventures into the social paths of UK artists and being present here, being present South by Southwest. I mean, who else do we need to look out for? I mean, you know, your collaborator. Who are we looking out for at the moment?
In the UK or Australia?
Australia. Let's go straight
in Australia. Obviously, I'm always going to put on JK47. He's a crazy artist. I've done a bunch of songs with him. I think he's just a generational talent.
Nice.
And his brothers as well, ECB, Blood Brothers. Most talented family.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Most talented family.
Your Google time, people.
Yeah, ECB. So, like, I'm taking them on my next national festival run.
Wow.
As well as an artist called Chloe Terrer. She's a crazy singer.
Sick.
Very talented artist. I'm currently working on a project with a rapper called Barker.
Mm-hmm.
She is nuts.
Really?
If you look her up on YouTube, she's got a freestyle she just dropped that went absolutely ballistic. She's got a bunch of releases that are crazy, and she's a very important person for the Australian music industry and also, like, her community as a whole.
Right.
So like, she represents a lot of people and in a really powerful way. She's got a crazy story and she's overcome a lot of things.
Wow.
And I'm like so happy to be working with her. I'm so happy to be working with her and just, I don't know, it's just nice. It's gratifying to even just like, you know, be close to someone like that that's overcome so much. You know, it makes you go like, I need to work harder.
Yeah.
Because obviously I've worked hard with music, but some people start with nothing, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then like them getting to just a point where they're supporting like a family is a massive hurdle.
It's a huge jump.
You know,
people,
and she's like supporting a family and killing it in the music game.
Wow.
So that's a massive shout out and I'm so grateful to be working with her. Like off the top of my head, that's like who I, there's so many people, you know what I mean? But off the top of my head, like those are people. Yeah, exactly. You say too many names, you have to say all of them.
Yeah.
But like coming to my head now, like obviously, JK47, longtime collaborator, ECB, his brothers, incredible, taking them on tour, Chloe taking her on tour, and Barker, I've been working with her a lot. And I think I mentioned to you earlier, my boy DOA.
Yeah.
I just produced a 15-track album for him.
Yeah, serious.
Very
guy.
Sick artist. Very
and graph writer.
Yes, and amazing writer. He's got a great story, and conviction.
Yeah.
Is the one word that I would give for him. Like his conviction is
with conviction
serious.
And with the one word an S, convictions.
Yeah. You're funny for that, bro. But yeah, so I think those would be, and then UK, obviously working Songa, massive shout out to Songa.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be here without him.
Nice.
I wouldn't be here without Tor, Cam.
Yeah.
And obviously been working a lot with Kill Owen, big fan of his music, love his music, very happy
Fantastic,
to have songs with
him.
Young Dave as well, been working with him, he's sick. And yeah, man, like obviously happy to work with whoever, bro.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's been sick.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, first time.
Yeah, man.
Huh?
Absolutely. Hopefully next time we've got some plaques to hang up here.
Yeah.
For the next time we chat.
Come on.
I tell ya.
Talk is real and that's what we want out here.
Yeah,
you know
bro.
What I mean? Killer Keller podcast, out like in was out of fashion, the mighty Nerf. Come on, get some. You know what I mean?
You know
Big
what
shout
it is.
Out to Australia. My peoples, the family, the crew, and all my associates, acquaintances and friends that are out there will be over soon. Look, we're out like it was out of fashion. Listen, you stay lucky, all right? Crime don't pay, but neither do they, all right? Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't. You stay lucky, people. Peace!
Love that. Bro, you're slick with it, bro.